The following takes place between 7 and 8.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron of Florida Estates Winery. Wine enthusiasts can call us at any time during the broadcast by dialing 646-727-3235. Once again, the number is 646-727-3235. Wine industry representatives are also encouraged to join us on air.
This is Stuart Scott from Camas Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Mike Brown, the Wine Growers Association of Georgia.
The executive director.
Michelle Meyer, I work with my father, Les Meyer, at Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Westport Rivers Vineyard and Winery.
We're located at 417 Vicksburg Road, Westport, Mass., and our phone number is 508.
I'm on the board of directors for the Minnesota Grape Growers Association.
Always informative and entertaining.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people on, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
It's all about wine.
You know, Ron and I are talking before the show starts, and all of a sudden, you know, we hear the countdown, and we're like, oh!
Yeah.
It was so funny, because simultaneously, we were like, me, 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 me.
Getting ready for our program here.
Makeup artists come flying in here, one last little touch-up and everything. Yeah. Like, wow, that's pretty cool.
For radio, yeah.
It's a professional outfit now, so we have to look professional on the
waves. On the airways. Yeah.
And we are tonight in Montana, which is our topic, and where I can tell you in Missoula right now, it is partly cloudy, 69 degrees. They are expecting thunderstorms later. And a low of in the low 40s, like around 41. So very nice.
I've
up
been
there.
To Missoula, Montana.
Yes, very cool. Did you like it?
Yeah, it's a nice town. I was there years ago. I jumped out of an airplane there. Sport jumping.
Jump?
Yeah,
really?
Sport jumping. Missoula, Montana has a great big firefighting jumping squad that is out of Missoula, Montana. And whenever there's fires there, that's where they're stationed in Missoula, and they're fire jumpers, and they go all around that part of the northwest there, fight forest fires and jump into forest fires and all that. And big contingent up there. And I went up there to do some sport jumping, and the fire jumpers thought we were nuts jumping out of airplanes just for fun. On the other hand, we thought they were nuts to jump out and fight a fire. So
I could see that. So. I've been across the state. I've been to Butte, and it must have been Missoula. Must have been on the interstate somewhere along there. But I've been across the state, and it's just it's incredible. I mean, it's
beautiful.
It's huge. It's open, and it's beautiful up there. Big sky. Country. It's just,
I mean, it is.
Yes,
it's
wonderful. So that's the topic for tonight, and we just brought you the brief weather for this evening. And I'd like to say hello to everybody out there listening to us, and welcome to the program. It's All About Wine. I'm Mike. Ron is on with us, and later in a few minutes after Ron's introduction to the state, we will have Andy with Ten Spoon Vineyard and Winery up there in Montana. We'll be discussing some interesting information about his winery and what goes on in Montana. But first, here's Ron. Yay.
Thank you very much. I'm going to touch on something first before we get into Montana. You have heard me talk over and over again about H.R. 1161, the CARE Act, and what's going on with that, and how I'm so against it and everything, and how so many people are. There is a link you can go to, and if you want to go to, want to email me at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. Email me. I'll give you the link. You can do an online petition. It's Save the Grapes. The Save the Grapes site does an online petition. You just fill in your name, a little bit of information, and they will send it to your congressman. Wherever you are in the country, they will forward it to your congressman. Very simple, very easy. You don't have to write a letter. You don't have to sit down and compose something. You just need to put your information in there, and they will forward it to the congressman via email or fax or whatever you choose. I did that and sent one to my congressman. My congressman in Florida is Gus Bilirakis. He is a member of the United States Congress. He replied to me. A quick letter here. I want to read you the letter I got in the email. It says, "Dear Ron, thank you for contacting me to share your opposition to H.R. 1161, the Community Alcohol Regulatory Effectiveness Act. I appreciate hearing from you. H.R. 1161, sponsored by Representative Jason Chaffetz, would reaffirm state-based alcohol regulations," which, to begin with, and I'm editorializing here for a second, I didn't like him starting off his paragraph that way, but let me continue. H.R. 1161 has been referred to the House Judiciary Committee and is waiting further legislative action. Since I am not a member of this committee, I will only be able to vote on the Community Alcohol Recovery Effectiveness Act if it is considered by the entire House. You may be certain, however, that I will remember your opposition to H.R. 1161 should I have the opportunity to consider it or similar legislation in the future. I will also share your comments with my House colleagues. I am certain they will benefit from your views. As a resident of Florida's 9th District, your comments and opinions are an important source of information to help me carry out my duties." And then he goes on and campaigns for about two more lines here. But a response, which in reality, if you contact your congressman, they really should respond. That is part of their job. So I did get a response from him. You can contact every one of your congressmen. All you need to do is go to SaveTheGrapes.com, and there is a link there that you can contact your congressman just by filling in information. If you can't get through it that way, you want to email me again, allaboutwine101@gmail.com. That's just the letter G, gmail.com. I will send you the link. So let's get on this. Let's stop this bill before. Yeah, thank you, Beth. Well, let's stop this before this gets out of hand. Which just having it introduced, in my opinion, is getting it out of hand. Montana. I've always liked to introduce to you Montana before we go any further on these things, like we do every week, or every state that we cover. Montana is located in the northwest part of the country. It is bordered on the north by Canada, on the west by Idaho, on the south by Wyoming, and on the east by North Dakota and a little bit of South Dakota. Very large state, is the third largest in the country, behind Texas and Alaska. Mike and I were talking before the program. We've both been there. Beautiful country, just absolutely gorgeous. When they say big sky country, which is their motto, it really is. It's just like, you know, you can see like forever when you stand somewhere. State is flat on the east, well, reasonably flat on the east, and mountainous on the west. The Rocky Mountains run through the west. Montana actually is divided by the Continental Divide. It is in Montana. For those of you who are not familiar with the Continental Divide, everything west of the Continental Divide runs west. All waters that flow run west to the Pacific Ocean. Everything east of the Continental Divide runs east to the Gulf of Mexico. So they have the Continental Divide with rivers running both directions. Main rivers in the state are the Missouri River, with its headwaters in Lewis and Clark County, actually, which I thought was really cool. Headwaters in Lewis and Clark County runs through there. The Yellowstone River is another big river in Montana, and it connects into the Missouri River, and they both run down into the Gulf of Mexico. There are a couple rivers, the Flathead River, that actually runs north into the Arctic Ocean watershed, which it's whatever, you know, I don't know what the Arctic Ocean watershed, most of them run west out into the Pacific Ocean. The state has 56 counties. All sorts of odd shapes and sizes and everything, not in a pretty pattern. We've talked about some states where the counties are nice and square. Well, Montana just looked like they just threw them all together, however way they felt like throwing them together. Most of the counties on the western part of the state are in the mountains and a lot of odd shapes there, probably by the mountain ranges and stuff. And the ones on the eastern part of the state really aren't that squared or anything. It just looks like they did a hodgepodge of counties. But 56 counties, two main highways. I-90 runs east to west through the state, coming out of North Dakota, going through Billings, Bozeman, Butte, Missoula, and on into Idaho. And then coming out of Canada, running through Great Falls, Helena, which Helena is the state capital. It's in the central west part of the state, through Butte and on down into Colorado. That is Highway 15, I-15. Those are two main interstates. And then there's the standard U.S. highways that are sprinkled throughout the state, cutting it off, but only two main interstates. Elevation in Montana is rather high. When you look at a map, a lot of the maps I've been looking at, I've been seeing a lot of green because of rivers and low-lying areas. When we were talking about, well, even Missouri and Iowa and some of these places, especially Mississippi and all that, mostly green. Well, Montana is almost all brown. There is high elevation. The lowest point in the state of Montana is 1,800 feet. That's the, I believe it's pronounced Kootenai River. The highest point is Granite Peak at 12,799 feet. So it is a high state as far as elevation goes, and with a lot of the cities in bowls of the valleys and stuff. Really is a gorgeous state. I love the state of Montana. It's just a beautiful state. The wineries in Montana are, well, let me see. I want to click on this first. Montana wineries, it's funny. Whenever I search a state, and I've mentioned this before, I see 10, 12 different sites. And one site had 36 wineries in Montana, which I don't know where they got them, but everybody else had 8, 10, 12. The map that I saw had like 7, and this is what I continuously see, 7 wineries. I think previous maps, the ones that show a lot, are simply because it is wineries that have popped up and then disappeared. So there's a lot of the wineries that you see around Montana are just ones that haven't been there. When you look at a map of Montana, the western edge of Montana is where almost all the wineries are. There are a map that I look at and the site that I use shows that there is 11 wineries in Montana, and almost every one of them on the western edge. There is one on the eastern part of the state that is at Miles City, that is Tongue River Winery, and that one is located in on Highway 94 in the eastern part of the state, but everybody else is on the western part of the state. So we are going to talk with one of them on the western part of the state that's actually in Missoula, Montana. This is called Ten Spoon Vineyard and Winery. And Mike, when you call him, he wants us to call him on the winery line. Are you there? Uh-oh. Well, I don't hear Mike, and I don't see Mike. He's already called him, and he's called him on the cell line. Mike's got a hold of Andy, who is talked to. Andy wanted me to call him on the winery line instead of the cell line for fear his cell phone was going to give out on him, and they are talking right now. See what if he can get back on with us or if he's going to get on to another line or something. But we're going to talk with Andy Spoon Cellar or Spoon Cellar. I'm not sure how he pronounces his last name. S-P-O-N, Spawn, I think it's Spawn Cellar. They are located in Missoula, Montana, Ten Spoon Winery. And, oh, there he got him on the right line. Okay.
Hi, there we go. We're on the right line now.
I was talking to Mike. I said, Mike, you need to call him. And I go, uh-oh, because Mike didn't respond to me. And then I looked at the board here, and I saw that he had called you on your cell, and I'm going, oh, no, we need to call you on the winery line. So I see everything's correct here now, and everything's good, and you're back with us. That's great. Everyone, this is Andy. What did you pronounce? Spawn Cellar or Spoon Cellar?
Okay, he was we just got him out of the screening room. Hold on just a second. I'll put him on. Sorry
about
that. Yeah. Okay, go ahead, Andy. You're on.
Oh, hi. Ron, thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Your last name is pronounced what? Spawn Cellar?
It's Spawn Cellar. It's a German name from Eastern Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Ah, okay. Well, this is Andy Spawn Cellar from Ten Spoon Vineyard and Winery, located in Missoula, Montana. Andy was kind enough to agree to talk with us tonight about Montana wines and wineries, and particularly about Ten Spoon. Andy, I'm going to let you start running. Tell us about Montana wineries and about the grapes you grow and about the climate, and I'll just let you talk about your lovely state for a while there.
Sure, you bet. We started our winery in 2003 with a federal wine license, but we've been growing grapes since 1998 here in the Rattlesnake Valley north of the University of Montana. We're growing French American hybrids, Maréchal Foch, Leon Mio, Frontenac, and St. Croix are our reds, and then St. Pepin and La Crosse are our whites. They're all French American hybrids, as I said. Some are older than others. The Maréchal Foch and Leon Mio are classic old French American hybrids, and then the balance of the grapes were all hybridized further here in the Wisconsin, Minnesota area in the last 25 years. We make a Range Rider Red, which is a blend of all our reds in the vineyard, and the St. Pepin, our white grape, we go by the varietal name on that. And we do upwards of 1,000 cases a year out of our 5-acre vineyard. And it depends on the year. It gets a little hair-raising here in the Rocky Mountains at 3,500 feet raising grapes. So right now we're working on bud break, and we have late bud break grapes and early ripeners, and that's how we do it up here. But what's interesting is that everybody's late this year. I talked to one of my growers down in Redwood Valley, and they're California, and their shoots are about 4 inches long, so which normally this time of the year they'd be upwards of eight inches to a foot long by now. And bud break over in Washington on the Yakima River is just taking place now. So everybody's about, I'd say everybody in the grape growing regions of the West are probably a good 3 weeks behind.
Why?
We're looking to avoid frost. That's our big thing here. It hurt us pretty substantially the last couple of years. We had a frost last year on May 21st that was 29.1, and we have overhead sprinklers all the way across our vineyard, so we started those at 2 in the morning, and by 3:30, the whole vineyard was covered with a thin coat of ice, and then we left the sprinklers on, washing the ice with fresh water right on through till about 8 o'clock in the morning. And we lost probably about 50% of our crop.
Wow.
It kind of hurts for a small winery, but we have a really diverse program here. We do fruit wines, and we do three vinifera wines, and we do our French American hybrids from our own vineyard. Then we actually even blend some hybrids with vinifera, which makes a pretty outstanding wine, by the way. So, let me see, what else can I tell you?
What's What is the soil like? What type of soil do you have?
Good question. The continental ice sheet, during the last ice age, came right down over the top of the mountains here behind us, and was about 1,000 feet thick. And we're right where the glacier outrun was, and it spewed boulders and water out. It was a massive torrent, and so right where we're at in the valley is about 1,000 feet deep with glacial rubble, and the soil's mainly sand and gravel, with some clay finds where the braided streams from the glacier came down through here. Our whole property is lumps and bumps, and if you look at it from above in a sat nav photo, you can see the braided streams, just like much like you would see when you look at the overhead photos of the glacial streams up in Alaska. And anyways, that's the kind of soil we're dealing with, and we've pulled a ton and a half boulders out of our our vineyard. Yeah, so we harvest boulders as well as grapes.
Hard to ship, though.
You know, it's hard to ship, but, you know, what I'll say about that whole thing is that the soils are well-drained, and we're certified organic here, had a soil improvement program since 1998, and what was a pretty scarce topsoil situation we've developed in our vineyard into pretty nice soil. We've grown cover crops every year in our aisleways and put rye grain in and legumes on alternating years to build up the nitrogen content. And we try to do minimum cultivation. We cultivate under the wire with a weed badger, one of the big wire-tined hydraulic units that are made up there in Minnesota. A lot of grape vineyards are using those now, and that's been a pretty wonderful tool actually. So, but being certified organic means that we don't use any herbicides, and we don't use any pesticides. We're funky chemical free. So, yeah. At any rate,
do you continue that into the winemaking process all the way through then?
We do. We're a certified grower and winery, and that means that we use natural yeast compounds to feed the yeast rather than diammonium phosphate, which is the most common yeast food is that's used out there in the industry. And we've got to make muster on all of our processes in terms of being organic. So, and we don't add. So we're kind of unusual because we're of a handful, one of a handful of wineries in the United States, and literally, I mean, a handful of wineries that has a complete line of wines that's no added sulfites. We don't put sulfur compounds in any of our wines.
Do you notice that it affects not adding sulfites, that it affects your shelf life?
I think that our shelf life on our reds, I've got some 2005 Mendocino Pinot that I made. This is 2011, so it's pushing up on 6 years old, and it's pretty darn tasty. So that's what I have to report to you.
I've talked to a lot of wineries, you know, that try to do organic and even biodynamic. A couple of them I've talked to are biodynamic wineries, and more power to you. It's very difficult down here in Florida in the vineyard I have. It's impossible to do organic because we not only raise grapes but we also raise bugs, and
right.
So it's, you know, I mean. Once bud break, we go, okay, we're organic, and then about 2 weeks later, we go, forget that, and we spray.
Well, it's the critters love that moisture, and one thing I'll say about, we have to deal with a short season and frost up here, but one of the great things about growing in Montana is, the part of Montana we're in is that it's very dry. Our average humidity here is right around 16 to 20%, which is very dry. So when you have dry ambient conditions, the bugs aren't quite as profuse.
But your weather, you hit on it lightly, but give us the winter lows and the summer lows and highs, and when your bud break usually hits, and when you pick, and you know, mm-hmm. all that related to the vineyard. I mean, the weather does have a big effect, we know, so.
Well, you know, that's a really interesting part of being right where we're at. We're in the Rocky Mountains, and we're influenced a great deal by maritime conditions from the coast, and the way the jet stream moves from kind of the southwest to the northeast means that Oregon, northern coastal Oregon weather is generally our weather a day to 2 days later. In a broad sense. I mean, the moisture content of it can change a lot, but it's really interesting when the big storm cells come in off the Pacific and Oregon, and they're big ones with a lot of moisture in them, we can usually count on getting that a day and a half later to 2 days later. Maybe not as in much volume, but because a lot of the water's wrung out of the systems by the time they get here. Now, the counterpart to that maritime weather that pushes in from the coast is the big Arctic weather that blows down, you know, the Canadian Express and
right.
the Arctic Express. And that comes screaming down the east front of the Rockies and occasionally is so dense that it pushes over the mountains and floods the other way. And that's why Walla Walla, Washington, of some fame these days for growing good Cabernet and Syrah, gets burnt down about every 6 or 7 years because the big Arctic lows will flood over the mountains all the way over into Washington and will frost them out over there and get winter kill. So we have these two big competing weather influences here, and then you take that and combine it with La Nina and El Nino in cycles, and you know, it's just a wild and woolly existence that we have here. So, I'd say that there's some general parameters that hold pretty true. Usually by the last week of May, we're solidly out in the no frost conditions, and the weather. I will tell you that the weather has changed measurably in the last. I'd say in the last 10 years, it's not just noticeable; it's entirely measurable.
Going into more detail on that, expand on what.
Well,
that.
I'd say. Well, specifically, I'd say that the average temperature here has raised at least a degree and a half to 2 degrees. And,
wow.
The frost date used to be, you could dependably count on a frost on Memorial Day here.
Wow.
And it could just about count on frost the first or second week in September. Now, we're often frost-free from the middle of May right on through to the middle of October.
Wow.
And I'd say that's quite a change, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Now, you know, when you add in the push and shove between the Arctic Express and the maritime systems and then in alternating years, El Nino and La Nina, that's all subject to a little bit of change back and forth. So the thing to do is to try and control or have as many, let's put it this way, you don't have any control, but you to have as many responses as you can to the situation. And that would be good viticultural practices so that your vines are cold resistant in the events, know how to hold your vines back so that they bud later. To avoid the last frost if you can, how to manipulate your cover crops, how to use your irrigation system to raise the dew point in your vineyard before an event. There's just a whole toolbox of things that you need to do to make sure that you can withstand winter kill and frost events. And then, of course, pests, too. Oh, that's an interesting thing. You'd probably like to, your listeners would probably like to know about this, that two of the biggest problems we had in our vineyard were birds at first, and then later wasps. And we've we're doing well with those both now. And our biggest friend now are I would say probably peregrine falcons and Swainson hawks, and they're both very hungry for songbirds. And the biggest grape robbers of all, of course, are robins. And robins will make a mess out of a vineyard in a big hurry. And they're also a delicacy to small, very fast raptors. So the raptors have moved in, and our bird problem is very much under control. And so we don't use netting. We used to use shotgun with blanks. Of course, it's a no-no to shoot birds, but we use big, noisy blanks, and we've even stopped using those. The hawks are doing such a good job, and the, and the big horned the great horned owls as well. But the wasp, now that's another deal. We found out that the most effective way to control wasps is to get two types of traps, the dry wasp traps and the wet ones. And we put, you want to get the cheapest beer you can at the market, because it seems like the most odoriferous, inexpensive beer is what attracts the wasps into the wet traps. I'm a fan of Wisconsin, I will not name a specific beer that works really well. But at any rate, but the other thing that works really good in the dry traps is the least expensive chopped turkey loaf that you can, you know, all of us can find it down at the grocery store in the lunch meat counter, and just buy the least expensive chopped turkey loaf that you can, and we buy it umpteen packages at a time and throw it in the freezer, and take it out as we need it, and then when the hot sun beats down on that turkey loaf for a day or two, I tell you what, it's a great wasp attractor. And,
I can imagine, yeah.
The other thing that works really well is putting your traps out. You need to find out what the timing is, and you know, watching your orchard or your vineyard closely to see when the queens come out, the wasps and the hornets. That's when you want to have your first round of traps out early in the spring, because if you can trap the queens, then that really cuts down on the number of nests in your vineyard and orchard area. And it cuts your problem immensely if you can catch some of the queens in advance.
Well, that is fascinating. A little bit of
viticultural trivia for you.
I've talked to so many people around this country, and one thing that Mike and I have learned to expect is that people don't just have a vineyard and make wine. They are involved in all sorts of stuff like that. So.
Yeah. Oh, it's totally amazing. When you get down to actually growing it and making it, and then we started self-distributing our own wine, and we still self-distribute, I'd say, about half of our wine, and we have distributors doing part of it. But when you go out and market your own stuff and design your own labels and grow your own grapes, and it's quite a business lesson, actually.
Without a doubt, yes.
Was there anything else I could share with you? Or?
Oh, definitely. I've got questions for you.
Okay.
You mentioned your grapes. You also do fruit wines. Tell us about those.
Well, fruit wines have been extremely challenging to make. They tend to be low in nutrients, and because we're not allowed to use diammonium phosphate in the organic end of things, we have to use a lot of yeast, autolyzed yeast, which is old yeast, dead yeast, that has organic nitrogen in the cell walls, and we use that to feed the live yeast in your fermentation. So you have to figure out how to do that and make the wine and have it taste non-yeasty when you're done. And there's been some real challenges in regards to making good fruit wine, and we think we've about got her down now. We've been making pear wine and flathead cherry dinner wine that's dry. We have exceedingly good sweet cherries up here in western Montana. We have the largest freshwater lake west of the undammed lake west of the Mississippi here, and they grow sweet cherries all around the lake, and widely recognized for high quality. And so we started making dinner wine out of those, and it's our most popular wine, by the way. Flathead cherry dry is holds its own with most grape wines out there, and it's absolutely dry, about 13% alcohol, and goes well with Italian food and so forth, so on. But I think our two most successful fruit wines have been the pear wine and the cherry wine, and then we have an orchard up on the Flathead Indian Reservation north of us that Dave and Kathy Good run, and it's 20 acres of apples, and they have really nice varieties there. But I've been making apple wine, which sounds pretty pedestrian, but if you go over to Brittany and Normandy, apple wines and liqueurs are not uncommon at all. And so we thought, well, we're going to give this a spin, and we've been using their apples for the last few years, and people are just raving about the apple wine.
Wow.
It goes really fantastic with a loaf of baguette and some triple cream French cheese. It goes really well with that. And it goes well with Thai food, by the way, too, spicy Thai food. So the fruit wines have been really a good way for us to have a little shorter turnaround on our wines and good cash flow. And it's been real helpful because, you know, the grape wines just plainly take longer to age. So it's been a good way to fill in the curve, the peaks and the valleys, if you will, in the old sales graph.
Well, I've been to Missoula, Montana, as has Mike. We were talking before the program came on about how beautiful it is up there. You are located in what part of the city?
We are north of the university, about 3.5 miles up. Straight north of in the Rattlesnake Valley. And you go down to the bottom of the Rattlesnake Valley, and there's the Clark Fork River. And then right across the river, of course, is the University of Montana and Grizzly Stadium. We love our Grizzlies here.
Yeah. Missoula is located in like a bowl, if you will. The valley and all that. That would seem that it would help with the weather systems that go through.
It's the interesting part of that is that it's a big valley. But it'll fill up with cold air fairly quickly. The place to grow grapes is where we're at, because we're about 250 or so feet, 250 to 300 feet above the valley floor, farther up the valley here, and so all the cold air slides down into the valley floor at the elevation of the river, and that's where the coldest air is in the valley. It would be tough to, I think, grow grapes down in the valley proper because of the way it fills up with all the cold air that slides down off the mountains at night. But up, actually, these mountain valleys, and actually if you go to places in Switzerland and around Europe, there's some very nice wineries in mountain valleys and because the air drainage is quite good.
I'm going to ask you a question about your competition. How many wineries do you know of that are in Montana?
Well, there's probably, there's one, two, three of us, I'd say two of us that actively make our own wine. I'm the guy that has it, that's dumb enough to have a vineyard and try to be a winemaker at the same time. So I think that sets us apart from other wineries. But there's several people doing a good job of making wine here, and it's varied. The other winemaker that I associate with most is Ken Schultz at Hidden Legend Winery, and he's a mead maker, and he makes excellent mead. Makes a nice line of meads, different flavors and so forth, and won a lot of awards with his mead, and doing very well with it, by the way. And his meads are all made out of Montana products, fruit and honey. And then we have a lot of wineries here are bringing in wine in bulk from other places and labeling it. And then there's a couple wineries here that are making wine, including myself, buying grapes from Washington, Oregon, and California, and hauling the grapes in and fermenting them. And it's a varied, a variable program. There's two or three wineries that are making fruit wines, and I'd say that the most success that wineries are having is with grapes, though. And but Ken's had a lot of success with his mead, and doing quite well.
Oh, well, good. Your state, the government, good, bad, indifferent. Do they help, hinder, play along? How does the Montana
state?
Yes,
excellent. It's excellent. The state of Montana, I've worked with Republican and Democrat administrations, and they've been both excellent to work with in terms of supporting small business. And we were primarily a distribution state, because it's such an odd weather situation here. It's never been a production state. When we finally, there were enough of us wineries make enough noise about self-distribution, the state responded, and we're quite conducive to getting everybody together and mediating a self-distribution add-on to our alcohol laws here. So that's been very good, and the state's very good to work with. I have absolutely no complaints, and I have lots of good things to say. And sometimes that's not always the case. People sometimes are a little down on government, but I have actually nothing but nice things to say about the state of Montana.
Wow.
And as for the federal government, I think the federal government's been great. And I'm not polishing the apple here. I'm just saying that everybody that we've worked with has been good. The only complaint that I have with the federal government is sometimes the label formulation division is a little unpredictable.
to be polite, yes.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with H.R. Bill 1161?
Oh, is that the SAVE bill?
Yeah, the CARE bill.
Oh, the CARE bill. That's what they're calling it. Yeah, that's a really bad bill for wineries.
Yes, it is. I always like to point out to everybody about that. I always bring it up on the radio and all that stuff. So if you're not familiar with it, I wanted to make you familiar. And since you are, that's good.
Yep.
That's it.
I'd encourage all of your listeners to write a letter to their congresspeople and urge them to vote that down. Vote no. On the CARE bill, it's about restricting trade and limiting choice, and it's several steps backwards. We made great progress in this country in the last 10 years in terms of wine choices for consumers, and the winery industry has expanded and created all kinds of jobs because wineries have had the freedom to sell their products and. I'm just appalled that there's people in some parts of the industry, particularly the distribution part of the industry, that think this is necessary. But it would be a huge step backwards. And sometimes I think that lobbyists just need some way to justify their,
existence
by coming up with things like this.
I wanted to point out to our listeners that was an unsolicited testimony by Andy talking about that 1161. I didn't put him up to it, but I feel so strongly as he does about it. Again, Save the Grapes has a site on there where you can click on. You can contact your congressman or your representative or your congressman. All you need to do is fill in information, and they will do the rest for you. So people out there, if you're listening to this, go to Save the Grapes, or again, you can contact me at allaboutwine101@gmail.com, and I will give you the links and all that to it. So thank you, Andy.
Yeah, I just like to say, because there's always two sides to every coin, and one thing I'll say about many of the distributors that I worked with here in Montana, they were willing to broker the self-distribution situation with us wineries a number of years ago, back in 1999, so that we would, in fact, have the opportunity to get large enough to be effective partners with them in sales and so forth. And I thought that was, for those people that were willing to do that, that was very forward thinking. And I applaud them for doing it. And we work with four different distributors here in the state of Montana, and we couldn't be more pleased with our relationship with them. You know, it's not a solid across the front, one way or the other. There's been lots of people in the distribution side of things that have been very supportive. But I have to say that the National Association really needs to re-examine if they're pro-business. They need to, and I mean pro-business in a sense of encouraging small business, need to re-examine this CARE bill. It's really not worth pushing forward.
I agree 100%. I can't agree with you more. How about distribution out of state? How are you able? Can you ship to different states or within your state, or can you receive? Or what's the word there?
Well, that's a mixed bag, of course, because as you know, the 21st Amendment is essentially a vehicle for states' rights. Back in the day, and I'll just give you a little history here before I answer the question all the way. But the 21st Amendment had a lot of things to achieve, and that was to appease the temperance people. And the temperance movement at the turn of the century in this country was huge. Then, of course, there were all the folks that prospered during Prohibition. The minute you make something illegal, when people really want it, you create a distribution system that's illegal and causes problems. And Mr. Capone was a primary example of that. And that was one of the things that the 21st Amendment needed to deal with. And then, of course, you had hungry state governments everywhere that needed revenue and for services. And so those were three really important needs that needed to be met. And the 21st Amendment was probably one of the most interesting pieces of legislation ever. It wasn't legislation, it was a constitutional amendment, but it was probably one of the most comprehensive things ever put forth, because it served the needs of a whole lot of people. It had alcohol control, which partially satisfied the prohibitionists and the temperance people. And it satisfied state governments because it gave them the right to appropriately, as they saw fit and as they see fit today, to regulate alcohol and collect the taxes. And it put all the people to work that were bootlegging and creating mayhem in legal jobs.
Right.
When you think about it, it's hard to please that many people with a piece of legislation, if you will.
That's a pretty
interesting thing. So if we could only do that more often, huh?
Yeah.
So the point is that we do we fill out paperwork for a whole bunch of states and send taxes to them and stay registered with them, and there's a few states out there that are pretty death on wine coming into their states. I think Pennsylvania may be one of the most draconian. It was really interesting. It was really interesting, though, that back when it looked like the Supreme Court was about a week before the Supreme Court acted on Granholm Hill, I don't know if it was Rick Perry or who the governor of Texas was at that time, as a Republican governor, decided all of a sudden, on a dime, that it was okay to ship alcohol into Texas, because they thought they'd stuck their finger up in the air and they knew which way that was going in the Supreme Court.
Knew which way the wind was blowing, yes. Yeah.
It went from being a kind of a felony. It was a felony in Texas to ship wine in. And then all of a sudden it was okay the next day. And this was about a week before, as I recall, it was about a week before Granholm-Heald decision was passed by the Supreme Court. So, you know, they're not dummies down there. They know that there's, I forget how many wineries Texas has now, but it's a fair number. And they want their wineries to have the ability to ship to other states, too. So they kind of lifted their barriers, if you will.
You know, and the thing is, I constantly say that I would just like to have 2 minutes in front of every state legislature, and I would get up there and say, wineries are a multi-billion-dollar business that create jobs and keep people working. If you want part of the pie, then release some of your antiquated ideas and let's get on the ball.
And you're right on, yep.
You know, it's something that if every state just starts looking at the fact that it could be so beneficial to them, and it's really sad. But another question about the winery, Lavender. I noticed on your website you had a page dedicated to just the lavender.
Well, we had a lavender crop, and we had to pull all the plants out this year.
Oh, no. Why?
Yeah, we had one of those Arctic events that I talked about back in 2008 in October, on October 12th. We all remember it here because it got so cold that it killed lots of perennials. The leaves stuck on the trees all the way through until the next May, and the new buds coming out had to push the old leaves off because they were just as green as could be and got killed by the weather going down to 12 degrees Fahrenheit on October. No, it went down to 8 degrees on October 12th, and it was just unbelievable. And it killed a lot of our lavender. And so this year they just all but died out, and we had a huge bonfire. So we'll be replanting. We'll be replanting, but you know, it's kind of, we're at 47 degrees north here at 3,500 feet elevation, and you kind of expect that you're going to have instances like that now and again, and it's just part of the game.
Yeah, but it's still, it's tough when it does happen, though.
Oh, there were a few tears shed over the lavender, and I think I lost in the last two seasons because of unseasonable frost. I lost about $150,000 worth of wholesale wine, and for a little winery, that's a pretty good hit.
That's a big hit, yes.
Yeah, it's a big hit out of our vineyard, and I don't have any problem selling all the wine because number one, it's pretty darn good wine, and number two, there's not a whole lot of wine growing at 47 degrees north and 3,500 feet elevation. So when I lose a portion of it, I've lost automatic sales. And I just say anybody that's out there listening to your program that if this gets out to anybody in the North Country and you're entertaining putting a vineyard in, well, strap yourself in for a pretty wild ride.
That is. I've heard that. We've talked to people in Minnesota and Michigan, and they've all said the same thing. It's a scary but fun roller coaster.
Well, when it's good, it's good, and when it's bad, it's sad. But you just hope for more good than bad.
That's true. Well, Andy, you're open tonight, I understand, according to your website.
Well, I have a lawn full of people behind me that are enjoying a view down the Bitterroot Mountains, and Lolo Peak is across the valley, and it's got a record amount of snow on it. And actually, in the next 2 days, we're looking at, like much of the country is, at flooding. So
are you?
We've got oh, we've got an incredible amount of snow up in the mountains, and we had really nice snow all winter long down here on the valley floor, and that took really good care of our grapes, and we had good subsoil moisture. But we have an incredible amount of snow up in the mountains, and it's going up to 75, 80 degrees tomorrow. So,
wow,
we're looking at flooding. Yeah.
Oh well, good luck with that. Thank you very much for your time today and this evening. I'll let you get back and go out and talk to your customers. Would you like to end this by telling us all how to contact you, where you are, all the pertinent information, website, phone numbers, everything else, in case any of the listeners would like to get over you and try one of your great 10-spoon wines?
You bet, Ron. It's the best way to reach us here at 10-spoon in Montana is to go to www.10spoon.com. And you can reach us at 406-549-8703 if you'd like to make a phone order, and you can talk to Megan. Megan's our tasting room manager and our sales gal, and she'd be delighted to take your order. So thanks so much for letting us be on your program, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. It was great and very enjoyable, and good luck to you up there.
Okay, Ron. Have a good one.
You too now. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay. There we go.
That was fun.
Very interesting. Yeah, I was just going to comment on one of the photos he has on the website where there's a sheep in the yard, and he says 10 spoons lawnmowers.
Yeah, I saw that.
Quite a few of those. That's pretty funny. Okay.
I apologize. I should have asked if you had any questions. I didn't.
No, I was interested in the government aspect of it because we always find out about how the government is working with or without the wineries, and so that was good. And
Montana is just, you know, the government's way, you know, way up there behind those wineries and stuff. That's fantastic. You know.
Yeah, definitely good. And I think that was about it. I mean, they're very much into energy and producing their own energy to support the winery. I think that's good, and I was, you know, that's another. I don't know if he covered that or started to cover that towards the beginning part, but you know, when they were talking about organic, but it looks like they're, you know, they're working not off the grid, but they're working towards that. It seems like based on what I read on their website. So that was kind of interesting when they're, you know, producing their own power to, you know, support the winery. So a lot of interesting things going on up there.
Very nice website too, by the way. I mean, quite a few pages on it and very informative. So, it was great talking with him today. So that's Andy Spunsteller from 10 Spoon Vineyard and Winery in Missoula, Montana. Get in touch with him if you all want to try some of his wines. And I think we're out of time. So
we have, let me go ahead and run this ad real quick, because you do have an event going on at the winery this Saturday. So if now would be okay to play that, I'll go ahead and do that, and we'll be right back for our little closing. So stick around.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flune.com. That's corp@flewn.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
I haven't heard that in a while. It's really tasty.
Nice job.
Thank you. Our production company, you know, that does things in between shows. That was cool. Next week, we're going to have to consult the Webster's Dictionary
Nebraska.
For the next state. Nebraska.
I just looked it up. Nebraska. N-E-B. Right. Nebraska. That's we were confused a bit earlier there. Yeah.
Which one's next? Wyoming? Yeah, that sounds about right.
Wow.
Or maybe we could go back to Hawaii or Alabama. Oh, we should do Alabama.
Yeah, they probably
Alabama should. People. Maybe call the
we're almost out of
up.
Time, too, so all of you yes. people tune in on live. Bye.
Yeah. See ya.
See ya.
Yeah, we were. Well, that was it. Wow, that was quick.
Yeah,
for
the live is done.
Listening to us on iTunes or on the archives, we concluded the regular broadcast, and I'd like to thank everybody for downloading this now and listening to us on the program. And
yes.
Yeah, there it goes. I just got the notification. Show is on, but not streaming. Okay. So if you'd like to comment on the show, you can email Ron, the host, at the address we were giving out earlier. It's allaboutwine101@gmail.com, allaboutwine101@gmail.com, and I'm sure he'd love to hear from you and let him know that you're listening. So, and if you have any comments, questions, or anything for a future broadcast, if you want to ask about Nebraska, then by all means, you know, send it to us in an email, and we'll put it out there for you. So
yeah, definitely,
and have it answered by the time the show starts. So or you know during the show, which is next week, 7 p.m. Right here on Blog Talk Radio or iTunes, however you're listening to us on the web. So great program and very cool. And Ron, as always, thank you very much, and thank you everybody for listening.
Thank you, Mike.
I think we're almost out of here. Yeah, it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a cricket. Yep, that was it.
Bus okay. people, thanks for hanging out.
Yes. Are the bus people there?
Yeah.
Okay, so, well, that was quick. You know, you have to open the window and then close it real fast because otherwise you go nuts.
I know.
It'll be a great weekend here in these parts, and everything should be very well for Saturday's Wine Fest. So, you know, definitely be in the area and check out Wine Fest. And
chance of rain, but not until the evening. So,
yeah, I heard it's going to be like Monday or something. I mean, you never tell. It's it'll be later. Yeah, everything's going to go good there. So, definitely make it out there. And I will see you all next week for Nebraska. And y'all have a good week. And 7 p.m. Eastern time next Thursday. We'll see y'all. Thank you.
Yep. Until next Thursday.
Yay. Okay.